I tried to take off running, somebody stopped me at the door. No, I left the remote behind this morning. All right. We'll start off with some good news. Steve will be back next class. Hope it's as good for you as it is for me. At the beginning of chapter 12, we begin to see this battle unfold. You had the seven-headed dragon who had claimed war without to get, at the beginning of the chapter, who? The woman, right? And she was having this male child. So his desire was to wipe out this male child. So he's standing there, everything's good, he's ready. Here we are, the child is born. God, no, the child is born, and what happens? God takes the child, right? The child is called away and taken up to heaven where God is. The dragon fails. So since the dragon can't have the child, the dragon now turns its attention to the woman. I'm about to attack the woman, and what happens? She's given what? That's right, she's given wings, and she's flown away to this place in the wilderness that's been prepared for her, where she's protected and nurtured for a period of time. So the Satan's attempts have failed once, and now have failed twice. So the next thing he says, well, let's go and we'll see if I can attack in heaven. So I'm going to go get this male child. Michael and the angels, they come out and they begin to wage war, to wage the attack. The dragon and his angels go up. And how does that work out for the dragon? That's right. He did not prevail. Not only did he not prevail, he was cast to the earth. So we see in chapter 12, we see his reign, and as we begin in chapter 13, the last of the things that was said about him in chapter 12 is, since he couldn't get the child and he couldn't get the woman, now who is he turning his attention to? The offspring, which is the church. So now, the martyrs, the Christian, the remnant, the faithful. So now, he's going to start calling up his helpers. He's been cast back down to the earth. So now we've gone from this scene that's going on in the spiritual realm. He's been cast back down to the earth, which is where humanity is, where the evil is, where the earth is. And we see in chapter 13 that now he's going to call on these two beasts, the sea beast and the land beast, to pitch in and help out. Now, as the class unfolds, we're going to see the sea beast is the Roman Empire. And the land beast is basically false religions that's come up during this period of time. But we'll build those points as the day goes along. So, here we have, and we're going to see that this sea beast that comes up, we're going to have the people worshiping. The second land beast is going to draw people to worship the idols of the beast. But this beast that comes up out of the sea, he's going to be given his power by the dragon that we studied in the last chapter. Okay, so here we have the dragon, the sea beast as the helper. We're going to have the land beast a little bit later. It's going to help build these idols of this beast and cause people to worship. So let's begin with the first three verses. And let's look at the first of these two beasts. To begin with, he rises up out of the sea. And again, what is that concept? We've had it throughout the quarter now. The sea, the land, humanity, society. So coming up out of the natural order of society is how this sea beast is coming up. He's coming up out of the sea. So how is he described? Again, think for just a moment about what this looks like if you're John and you're seeing this. Here is this creature that comes up out of the sea. First, he has seven heads, 10 horns. And instead of the heads having the crowns, what has the crowns here? The crowns are on the horns. There's 10 crowns, 10 horns, 10 crowns. So the seven heads, this idea of completeness, this idea of intelligence, this idea of deception, complete, total deception that's coming up. The same as the dragon, just like the dragon had seven heads. Okay, and now we got these 10 horns. Horns are power, kingdoms, right? If we repeat this enough, I know I have to repeat this enough to remember it. So that's all I'm asking you to do is help me repeat it enough so that we both remember it. And then with these 10 crowns that's on it, these are diadem, these are royalty. So this is basically the picture of whatever this beast is evil royalty. Complete deception, complete or powerful, and on his heads is written blasphemous names. Now, an interesting fact, we're gonna build the case, we're kind of saying this before we build the case. But these blasphemous names, we're going to now just take for the foregone conclusion that this is Rome. But it was nothing uncommon for Roman emperors to take on names such as Theos, which means God. Seder, which means Savior. One that escapes me, so I look back at my notes, is Kyrios, or Lord. Right. So we've got these Roman emperors that's taken on these names, such as Theos, such as Seder, such as Kios, or Lord, Savior, God. Emperors saying, worship me. Emperors saying, I am deity, I am God. Is that, I mean, this may not be exactly what that is referring to, but that's the first thing that comes to my mind during this period of time. Now, his body is that of a leopard. When you think of a leopard, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? When you just think the animal leopard. A spot, okay. Powerful jaws. I think I heard something else. Fast. They're powerful. Each of these animals are powerful. But the leopard is fast. And then he has the feet of bears. So the feet, the claws, the paws, they look like that of a bear. Now, okay, here is this leopard that I'm trying to picture, and the grizzly bear claw on the end. What do you think when you think bear? I think, how fast can I go the other way? No. Powerful. Absolute sheer power. And then last, the head of the lion. That lion that will devour. That lion that is all powerful. So here is this creature. He has 10 horns. Yeah, 7 heads, 10 horns. Each of those 7 heads is that of a lion. And each of those 10 horns have a crown. That's on top. Now, the good thing for us is that we have something we can go back to. You know, I've always thought, when Jesus is on the cross and he says, my Lord, why have you forsaken me? To the Jewish person who has read the Scriptures and knows the Scriptures, what do you think was one of the first things that popped into their head? Psalms 22, right? They hear the words, my Lord, why have you forsaken me? Or Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani? And all of a sudden they go, wait, I know this. I know this. I have to think John, as he's seeing this, goes, hey, I've seen something kind of like this before. This rings a bell. This sparks a bell. And thankfully for us, we've got Daniel, Ezekiel, some of the other prophets. But if you would, I meant to tell everybody Wednesday night to read chapter 7, Daniel chapter 7, for class today. But if you would, turn there with me for a moment, and let's look at Daniel chapter 7. And if you don't mind, keep one finger in Daniel 7 and the other finger in Revelation 13. I probably should have told you that before you left 13. But we just looked at this description of this beast. And then in Daniel chapter 7, and in verse 4, well, let's start in verse 2. Then Daniel spoke, and I saw in my vision by night, behold, 4 winds of heaven were stirred up the great sea. And 4 great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched until the wings were plucked off, and he was lifted up from the earth. to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And suddenly another beast, a second, like a bear, raised up on one side and had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and they said thus to it, "Arise and devour much flesh." And then after that I looked up, and there was another, like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird, and the beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. And then in verse 7, "And after this I saw a night vision, behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and exceedingly strong, and it had huge iron teeth, and was devouring and breaking into pieces and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the other beasts that had been before, and it had 10 horns. And I was considering the horns when another horn, a little horn, coming up among them, before whom the three first horns were plucked out by the roots." And it continues. So, does what we read in Revelation 13 sound a little bit like these same beasts that are coming up in Daniel chapter 7? So the same thing I said when Jesus said the words, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," on the cross, everybody's mind should have gone back to Psalms 22, where a lot more was revealed about the cross and what Jesus could say in those first few breaths. John's in a similar situation. He can't come out and say all these things about Rome. Can't necessarily come out and say that prophecy from that many years ago is being fulfilled today. But isn't that what he says by reminding everybody that, hey, look at what we see here should remind us. In Daniel chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar sees that great statue. We remember it had a head of gold. Its upper cavity, its upper body was what? Silver. Then thighs of bronze and feet iron mixed with clay. He had this vision, nobody could tell it. Daniel was revealed the vision and told him what the vision meant. What were these different things? "O Nebuchadnezzar, you are this head of gold. And these things after you are these kingdoms that are coming." Well, by Daniel chapter 8, we're actually, if we didn't already know, we're actually told what 3 of the 4 kingdoms are. We knew it was Babylon. Who was next? The Medo-Persian Empire comes up and takes over after Babylon. And after the Medo-Persians, who comes on the scene? Greece, Alexander the Great. He comes on and takes over, and after Alexander the Great, what's the next world empire? Rome. So you've got these prophets of old pointing forward to this time, and now we have John seeing these revelations. First, I mean, can you imagine how dreadful the scene would be that he saw? But then after that, what happened? Now, just keeping this comparison, and we'll go back and look at chapter 13 with a little more detail, but just keeping this comparison, in chapter 13, this beast spoke blasphemous words. He cursed the Lord. In Daniel, spoke pompous, arrogantly, much the same. In Daniel, that last verse we read, everywhere this fourth great beast was, it went in and it devoured, it broke into pieces, it conquered everything in its path. In Revelation chapter 13, speaking of this beast, which is the coming light, it's made up of all of the ones before it, right? It's just as powerful, just as fast, just as strong as all of those kingdoms before it, and it's all brought into one kingdom, into one beast. And authority over every tribe and tongue and nation is given. So the same voice that Daniel is building, now he's building. And to make the comparison even closer, in Daniel, has 10 horns. It made war with the saints. We didn't read that far, but in Daniel it made war with the saints. In Revelation it has 10 horns. It makes war with the saints. So for Daniel and the others that are John that's writing this, hey, this looks familiar. Hopefully to those Christians and the Jewish Christians that could help, or the Jewish Christians that could help the Gentile Christians, should immediately taken their mind back and said, "Oh yeah, this sounds familiar." To a lot of the prophecies. We've only looked at one of them for time's sake. But to a lot of the prophecies, this same kind of language that's been used before. So we have this sea beast, the first 3 verses. His parts are just powerful and ferocious animals. He is going to conquer and destroy anything in its way. Where does his power come from, though, in this story? That dragon. The dragon from chapter 12. He was defeated. He was thrown to earth. He went to earth to do what? To make war with the saints. And now we see it. This beast is coming up out of the sea to help with that war with the saints. Now, with this, I hope we've done a pretty good case to build up between looking at Daniel and here in the time that we have. I hope we've done a good case of saying this is the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire that Daniel and the other prophets had before said it was coming. This great fourth empire that is going to take over. And John is saying it is now here. That fourth beast is here. It is now time. Verse 3. His head was mortally wounded, but he was healed. So, one of the heads on this sea beast, the head was mortally wounded, but he was healed. Well, if you read, there's a good chance if you read 15 different people, you might get 15 different ideas what this means. Right? So let's make sure, first and foremost, that we keep this in context of what we're studying. God's all powerful. He's in control. Whatever it is that's been wounded, what did this beast represent? He's a composite of all of these nations that have come before. And this latest nation, the Roman Empire, that is as powerful as all of the others put together, going out and conquering, breaking everything into pieces. The majority of people says this points to Nero, which would fit. Because with Nero, when the first part of the persecution came upon the church, Nero was at its head. Nero was crazy, we know from history. Nero was the head at the beginning of the persecution because he needed someone to blame for some of his crazy deeds. And after his suicide, there was some weaker emperors that come up and took over, and it kind of looked, you know, it probably from the outside would have looked like Rome is kind of to have its end. But then Rome re-strengthens. By Domitian, his reign, Rome is all powerful again. So it does. You can see this in that, as in Rome is really powerful, really strong. It goes weak. I mean, think about it. If you've been persecuted, like Saddam Hussein had persecuted a lot of his people, at his dethroning, don't you just see the people with this sigh of relief, it's over? I could see that happening in Rome after the death of Nero. This looks weaker. These people look weaker. Maybe this is taking a turn for the better. And then about a time passes, Domitian comes on the scene, and the persecution picks back up, and the power picks back up, and it goes on to take over. But again, even if that is right, or even if that's not right, let's not miss the bigger point here, that whatever this beast was, he looked as if he had been mortally wounded, but now he is healed. And he is going on to fight this battle. So in verses 4 through 10, get back to the right. Verses 4 and Daniel just did not match. Let's get back to Revelation. Revelation chapter 13 and verse 4. Let's just kind of listen to the reading and try to put ourselves here with it. So they worshiped, well, we're going to start with about 4 through 6 to begin with. So they worshiped the dragon who had given authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And he was given a mouth, speaking great things, blasphemies, and given authority to continue for 42 months. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, and to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. And we'll pick back up with his power and what he was given power to do here in just a minute. But in verse 4, we see the people begin to worship. They're worshiping two. What are they worshiping? First, the dragon. And then, this beast, right? Why were they worshiping this beast? What do you get when you read that last phrase? Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? What does that sound like to you? That's right. This beast is indestructible. He looked wounded, mortally wounded, and now he's alive. He must be a deity. He can't be killed. He's all powerful. Let's get on his side. Doesn't that sound a lot what was being said about Rome's time, all powerful? Who could dare stand against him? Well, really, what nation could have stood up against Rome at this time? It broke into pieces, like iron. It broke into pieces, anything that stood before it. So, but does this, when I read that, though, to take a small divergent path, what does this mean? Where is the people's faith? Their faith is in what at this point? In this Roman Empire, in this worldly thing, we are safe because there's nobody who can take this down. Does that sound familiar? You know, I'm not definitely not trying to say any way, shape, form, or fashion that the U.S. is this beast. But we should be able to understand this mindset of when they're saying, who shall destroy it? Who can stand up against this great power? That mindset we should be able to understand. Not falling down and worshiping them as if they are deity as much as, hey, this is where my faith is. This kingdom is so powerful, there's nothing that can touch it. Who can make war with this beast? Nobody can defeat it. Nobody can touch this beast. We are safe. That is correct, yes. In a few verses, they're actually brought out to be, the comment is that there's a small group that didn't follow this line of thinking. There's a small group who kept their sense that, no, there is a more powerful out there. There is a kingdom that I'm a part of. And later they're referred to as those that had mark, right? Going back to chapter 7, those that had been sealed by Christ. So, Rome was powerful economically, militarily. In everything about what they did, they were very, very powerful. No one could stand against them. And with power sometimes comes arrogance. Verse 5, he was given a mouth to speak great things, blasphemies. He was given authority to continue for 42 months. Again, 42 months, 1,260 days, half of seven, a broken seven. Okay, so we have this time, God is in control. Here's how long you can do this. Literal 3.5 years? No, not a literal 3.5 years. But God has set the limits. God has set the boundaries. Here's how long that you have this control in earth. To persecute. To cause people to worship. The beast. This is how long you're given this control. And it was granted to him to make war with the saints. And if something is granted to him, does he have the power? This is a child that's come up and asked his parents for permission. Hey, can I go and do such and such? Well, if the parent says no, that child still can't do it. Where's the power? The power was with one who is granting the authority. Verse 7, then he granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. So, we have it. We have it for this period of time. And he is constantly opening his mouth in blasphemous words against God, against his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in his place. A constant assault. What would it have been like to be a Christian in that period of time? It would have been tough. It would have been tough. Tougher than anything we know. We talk about how the signs and the ways and the tendencies we see our country going. And we're right. Our country tends to be going in the wrong path. But nothing like this. Nothing to the persecution. Nothing to the amount that's going on here. Okay. Picking up in there in 7 and looking at the next few verses here. It was granted to him to make war with saints. He was given this power. The authority was given to him. But it was given to him over every tribe and tongue and nation. So even though he didn't have the power was granted to him. The authority was given to him. It was great power. Every tribe, tongue, nation. That power was given to him. All those who dwell on earth will worship him, whose name has not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. So coming back to the point Sandy just made, is there a section out there that are still faithful? Yes. Those that had received the mark, the seal on their forehead, back in chapter 7, this is my remnant, this is my people, these are the faithful. They are living in the midst of this worship, this evil worship, this pagan worship of emperors, but without spot, without falling to this. No matter how great, how powerful the pressure may have been against them, All who dwelt on earth will worship, except those whose name that was written in the book of life of the Lamb that was slain from the foundation of the world. Anyone who has an ear, let him hear. That sounds very familiar, takes us back. What usually followed that in the first three chapters of Revelation? He who has an ear, let him hear. Somebody finish that for me. Just a little bit louder. What the Spirit says to the churches, and then he who overcomes. Yes. He who overcomes the end. Thank you. I'm sorry I'm deaf. I ask questions and I can't hear the answer. That's bad on my part. So, not new phrases. And then the last verse, verse 10, we're going to come back and review this real quickly, but verse 10. If I go out and I live by the sword, those who live by the sword will die by the sword. So, is there not just a little bit of comfort in verse 10? He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. These people who are leading everybody into captivity, all the kingdoms for a time before this who have been these conquerors that led into captivity, well, guess what happened to them at some point in time? They were conquered. They were led into captivity. He who kills with a sword must be killed with a sword. He who has patience and faith, and here is the patience and the faith of the saints. So here in all of this, you have the saints who are being faithful. The saints who are managing to be faithful to God during this horrible, horrible, horrible time of things that are going on in the earth. So all the world, so with the period of time is all the world adores the beast and is held under his sway. This beast has the power. He has the popular vote. His blasphemy tyrants, it lasts for 42 months, 3.5 years. It's limited. He does not have all power. It is limited. And the saints patiently trust in God through all of this. People are being killed. Martyrs are being slain. Anyone who refuses faces unknown circumstances. To be a Christian meant you faced unknown trouble. At any moment, you could be sentenced to death. But during this period of time of the worst persecution you can think of, the saints patiently trust God. They hear these messages, okay, we have faith in God, this will be okay in the end. And then at the end, you see the saints that are crying out from under the altar, how long, O Lord, how long will you let this go? And the second beast comes on. With every beast we've seen, we're picking up in verse 13 now, the land beast. With every beast that we have seen up until this point, what kind of points have we made? Head of a lion, right? Body of a leopard. Dragon. With a swipe of his tail, he can take out a third of the stars. I've had dogs big enough, with a swipe of their tail, they can clear a coffee table. But this dragon was so powerful, with a swipe of his tail, he can take out a third of the stars in the heaven. And now we have this land beast. Does this land beast, a lamb with two horns, does he look so imposing? I think this comes back to the deceptiveness. This does not look as imposing. This is not as... He speaks like a lamb, but yet he speaks the words of the dragon. Is there not warnings time and again for look for those who come in sheep's clothing? But what are they trying to do? They're false prophets. They're trying to lead people astray. Someone with a good loud voice, read Matthew chapter 7, I want to say 15, I better look. Yeah, 15. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 15. All right. So here we have something that looks outwardly one way. The lamb, verse 13, I saw another beast come up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke like the dragon. So outwardly, he looks almost painted as if docile. But inwardly, he spoke like a dragon. He spoke like this dragon, this horrible creature. Now, it is not specifically stated here, but if you flip over to chapter 16 and verse 13... And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs coming up out of the mouth of the dragon, and from the mouth of the beast, and of the mouth of the false prophet. Okay? So we had the dragon, the beast, and this second beast, or the land beast. And in this verse, it's the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet. That land beast has been renamed to the false prophet. If you go over to chapter 19 and look down in about verse 20, then the beast was captured, with him the false prophet, who worked the signs in his presence by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were cast alive into the lake of burning with fire, or the lake of the fire burning with brimstone. Okay, so this is one of those times when I love it. I'm struggling with what this is, and then the scriptures just a little bit further just tells me what this is. And this is one of those cases. You know, I don't have to struggle like I did with what was the wounded that looked to be wounded to death but wasn't wounded to death. In this case, the same person, the same beast, is referred to later, and he's given another name, and that is the name of a false prophet. So I think we can, with great carefulness and with great consideration and with sincerity, or with, I've lost my word here, confidence is the word I was looking for, we can say that this lamb is a false prophet, or the one that would refer to the false prophets that would come. Now, he comes from a point of view of deception. Does he have authority? Yes. He has all the same authority that the first beast does. So he doesn't look as powerful, but he is as powerful. He has all the authority that the first beast does, limited by God for a period of time, but he does still have all that same authority. But in verse 14, how does he work? By deception. And he deceives those who will dwell on the earth with signs, which was granted to do the signs of the beast. So, and I left out one point. In verse 12, what is his purpose? He has all this authority, but what is he trying to do? That's right. His purpose is not all that power to himself. His purpose is to get that worship going back to that of the first beast, right? So, very much here pointing to this Roman Empire emperor worship that was so prevalent during this time, right? So, this false prophet, he's not trying to get everybody to worship him. His purpose is simple. He's trying to get those to worship this beast. Now, verse 15, he was granted power, even back up in 14 and 15 both. What's one of the ways he was deceiving? What kind of power did he use? Miracles. He used signs. He's given power to do these great signs. Deception. Trickery. Right? He was given power to do all these great signs so that people should, to convince people to worship the beast. Now, in verse 15, what else was he trying to get people to do? To build a what, or to make a what? That's in 14 as well. Make this image. That's right. To build up this image. What does this sound like? This is idolatry. This is idol worship. Build up these images. Okay, and there's a lot of people that have gone a long way with these in trying to apply these things. And I think we have to be very careful what we try to start applying all these different signs to. Because the most of them that we try to start applying the signs to is very hard to actually have any evidence to back up what we're saying. So I tend to want to leave this with this second beast, this land beast, this lamb. He's given the same authority, but his purpose was simple, and that was to get people to worship Rome. This emperor worship that was going on at the time. to get people to worship Rome, to get people to build these idols, to get people to really, what is this? What's he trying to get people to do? Turn away from who? God. Right? To blaspheme. Goes back to the work that was being done by the sea beast, blaspheming God's name, blaspheming his tabernacle, blaspheming his name among the people. This God that you serve, he is not powerful. The Roman Empire, we're powerful. We're the ones that can save you. Salvation, as we see with the names of some of these, that's exactly what he said. Salvation comes through me, the emperor. I'm Seder. Salvation comes through me. Salvation does not come through this God, superstitious God of yours. But there was still these people who held fast. He called both small and great, rich and poor, free and slaves. Was it just the elite smart ones that this land beast deceived? No. Both the smallest and the greatest, whether by money, whether by political status, whatever. He deceived them all and caused them all to receive the mark on their right hand or on their forehead. And this is another one. And we'll go ahead and read 17 and 18. And that no one may buy or sell except one who has this mark in the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who understands calculate the number of the beast, for the number is of it is the number of a man. His number is 666. And I need to make sure that I've got just that much less time than that last phrase. No, I'm just kidding. Talk about things that have taken off and taken whole groups of people that have come up with some of the craziest ideas in these sections. And that last phrase has gotten a lot of them. But what's being said here? He's causing these people to get this mark, right? In contrast to in chapter 7, all the saints received a mark, a seal, that they would be protected for a period of time. Here's God's people. Here's the remnant. Here's the ones who are faithful, the ones who would not bow down. Now you've got the opposite. Everybody else is being marked as well. But now it's becoming even harder, because if you don't have this mark in verse 17, what can you not do? I can't buy and sell. I can have all the food. I can have a farm, and I can have the most beautiful produce, the best of the lands, but I can't sell it to anyone. I'm going to go hungry. I might have all the money in the world, but nobody will sell me any food. I will go hungry. All the additional pressure that's being placed from every point of view on the remnant to confess. It was said of some of these emperors during this period of time that some of their leaders would send them notes and say, hey, here's how I'm dealing with this. And Domitian once said, that's fine. If you can get them to repent, if you can get them to repent, these Christians to repent of this worship to their God, then they don't have to be killed. Otherwise, you're sentencing them to death is correct. So much could be said, but I say this, and what I'd like to leave you with today for a parting thought, and let Steve pick up here. I did leave it for him to have to deal with 666. If you want to understand what it was like to be one of these guys and be standing before the beast and to be and not have that mark, go back and read Daniel with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, where you have this whole nation of people who would just bow down and prostrate themselves to this idol that was built, and you have these three lone heads standing up who says, I refuse, I will not do it. Think about how hard it would be to be one of those three lone heads in a nation in a sea of people that's given to this idolatry. That's what it would be like to be one of these remnant, their name was written in the Book of Life, that would not serve the beast. Thanks for your time, attention, and comments.